This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. President Trump's executive orders and the actions of the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, could have a significant impact on our state's economy, particularly for programs that rely on federal grant funding. Today, we're going to talk with Vermont's Senate Minority Leader Scott Beck, a Republican, about how state leaders are reacting and responding to President Trump's actions. We'll also hear from a recently fired USDA official in Vermont. But first, rather than wildly speculate about the economic impacts of the new Trump administration, we are joined by Vermont's Treasurer Mike Pecek to tell us what we do know so far about the effects of these changes. A Democrat, he's served in this office since January 2023. Treasurer Pecek, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Yeah, thank you very much, Michaela. It's wonderful to be here with you.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. And listeners, you can join the conversation as well. If you have thoughts, concerns, or questions about the economic impact in Vermont of some of the recent actions at the federal level, you can call in at 800-639-2211 or send us an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. So, Treasurer, in mid-January, you announced the creation of a task force that's focused on the federal transition. Tell us what it aims to do.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, during the first Trump administration, I was serving in state government. I was the commissioner of the Vermont Department of Financial Regulation. And during that time, I found that when we were proactively coordinating with each other across government and outside of government as well, that we were able to get ahead of fast-moving federal policies. We were able to protect Vermonters. We were able to take advantage if there were opportunities that presented themselves as well. So that was really the motivation for creating this task force this time, was trying to be proactive, trying to be coordinating across state government and across the economy more broadly. This time, the task force is really focused on what's the economic impact of some of the fast-moving federal changes, both at sort of the macro level and then also at the micro level, like how will this impact individual Vermonters? So that's been our focus, and we've had a number of task force meetings, heard from a number of individuals that were directly impacted or worried about the direct impact. And so far, I would say the word that could sum it up the most effectively is uncertainty. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of uncertainty with individual organizations, individual families, and across the economy as a whole. And that is a concern from an economic standpoint. When there is uncertainty in the economy, oftentimes businesses and individuals pull back. They don't take the risk that they otherwise would take, and you see broad economic impacts as a result.
Mm. What kind of risks are you talking about?
So if a business is thinking about expanding a manufacturing facility or hiring more people, they may decide not to do that at the moment. You know, in our office, we have a program that focuses on lending low-cost money for housing. We're thinking, well, maybe we don't want to lend at all or as much this year because of the uncertainty around federal funding and how that will impact Vermont, and maybe we need to conserve our cash in the state of Vermont. So those are just examples of decisions that a business may not take that they were considering because they're just uncertain about what the future holds for the economy as a whole, but also for their industry specifically.
Mm. I wonder if we could talk a little bit more about housing and housing production, a major issue for the state, which has been facing a housing shortage for years now. What have you learned from the task force, other than what you just explained to us, about how these actions by the administration could affect housing production in our region?
Yeah, so the area that we're most worried about is tariffs. Tariffs on Canada would mean that a lot of lumber pricing, potentially steel, even energy costs that go into housing construction, that those would all rise and cost more to build the same amount of housing. And as you point out, we desperately need housing. So the tariffs on Canada, which were delayed until March 4th, those have the potential, it seems, to come back, but we're not certain about that, nor are we sure about what exactly would dictate whether they come back or not. And I think that just leads into the uncertainty, you know, that I mentioned. But if there was a 25% tariff, a significant portion of lumber for housing in Vermont comes from Canada, and that would have a direct price increase. And as we talked through the task force about, well, are there opportunities with that? Are there ways that that timber can come from Vermont now rather than from Canada? What we learned was the timber in Canada is actually very specific and very effective for building housing. It's older trees. It's larger trees that have more stability. So it's not an easy thing to replicate on this side of the border. So it largely would lead to cost increases for developers and then ultimately consumers.
And if I understand this correctly, I believe the steel and aluminum tariffs have gone into effect, but many other, the broader tariffs, as you said, might not start until March 4th, if
yeah.
they start at all.
So I think that it's a little bit, there's a lot that's happened in the last 4 weeks. So
it's hard to keep up with.
Yeah. I think what the story is right now is that there were the announced tariffs on Canada and Mexico that have been delayed until March 4th. The aluminum and steel tariffs have been announced, but they go into effect on March 12th. Mm. So there's still some lead-in time. And then there's this broad tariff determination, as you mentioned, about reciprocal tariffs, so tariffs on countries that have tariffs on the United States. And it sounds like that will be a longer-term discussion, and it will be country by country. So that's actually better than just having a uniform tariff on everybody into the United States. It is more strategic in that sense, but it still will result in predictably, you know, increased costs and increased costs to consumers, which we're ultimately most concerned about.
There were also there was a period. It feels long ago now, but it was very recent. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, when there was a big federal funding freeze announced. It was the end of January before it was temporarily stopped by the courts. What percentage of Vermont's state revenues are made up of federal dollars? Can we quantify that?
Yeah. So 37% of our budget in Vermont is made up of federal funds. Those are funds coming to Vermont. Generally, four programs that the federal government has required states to set up. So it's not like we are coming up with ideas and asking the federal government for money and we're funding our own specific projects and unique things happening in Vermont. It's the federal government saying, you know, Medicaid or certain Department of Children programs or certain food programs, like these are things that states will administer in partnership with the federal government. Federal government will provide the money, but the states will administer the program on the ground. So 37% is a significant amount and certainly something we're concerned about. But there's also the impact just directly on the nonprofit sector, separate from the money that the state of Vermont receives. There's additional direct monies that many, many nonprofits in Vermont rely on. And in Vermont, a significant percentage of Vermonters work for a nonprofit, estimated to be as high as 1 in 5 Vermonters work for a nonprofit in our economy. So that is of concern also. And we hear from organizations that were impacted by the funding freeze. They had to rely on their bank to provide them money so that they could make payroll and keep their services going until the federal funds actually became available to them. So a couple of organizations seem to be just days away from having to lay off a significant portion of their staff, be very disruptive to critical services that are provided in the state. And again, there's uncertainty from them about, will this happen again? What happens the next time? What happens if the funding is not just frozen by the administration, but actually cut through the legislative process in Washington, D.C., and there's no legal recourse. It's just a matter of not having the money.
Well, let's turn to Congress. And listeners, if you're just joining us, we are speaking with Vermont's Treasurer Mike Pecek. Republicans in Congress are pushing to cut federal funding for Medicaid, the goal being to finance other areas of the president's agenda, like border security or allowed for tax cuts to go through. But cutting Medicaid could affect the financial well-being of hospitals and community health centers in every state. How do you think this type of policy change would affect Vermont?
Yeah, so we mentioned 37% of the budget comes from the federal government. The most significant amount in that 37% is for Medicaid. It's a significant program in our state. Depending on whether it's the original Medicaid or expanded Medicaid, a state has a responsibility to provide funding to match the federal government. So if Medicaid were cut, the question about how expansive could Vermont be in terms of the coverage, I think, is certainly one question Some individuals may not have the same, they may not be eligible for Medicaid in the way that they are now. Another concern, to your point, is around the reimbursement rate, how much is being provided to a health center or to a hospital. And our health system in Vermont is very fragile right now from an economic standpoint. There's a lot of financial stress throughout the system. So something like this, like a hospital getting a lower reimbursement rate for Medicaid patients, makes you worried about both the accessibility of healthcare, if a hospital or a provider made the decision around what patients they were going to see, and it also certainly concerns you around the financial stability of the system as a whole if that much less is coming in from the federal government as it has been. So I think that's a real concern. But the other thing, you know, from Congress, I mean, this is not a blue state or a red state issue. There are citizens across the country that rely on Medicaid and have. And people, you know, I think Congress people in those districts that are in play here in terms of their votes in Congress will be hearing a lot, I believe, from their constituents and already have about the importance and the popularity locally of their Medicaid programs.
Oh, we've discussed a number of concerns and potential negative economic impacts of the Trump administration's policies and moves by Congress. Has your task force identified any potential positive effects?
Yeah, so we're on the lookout both for challenges and opportunities. That was sort of the goal from the beginning. And just this weekend, we were talking with some of the task force members about the opportunities and trying to surface those. And the one that we've identified is something called Opportunity Zones. It's something that was created under the previous Trump administration that was set to expire, I think, in the next couple of years. So the concept there is that individuals can invest in an opportunity zone. They get certain tax benefits. It provides capital to lower economic areas. So there are like 20-plus opportunity zones across Vermont, like downtown Rutland, for example. So these are zones that attract capital. And if they're extended under this administration, you know, you could see more investment, both in terms of the idea of building this out in Vermont and actually more investment coming to certain cities across the state. So that's one area that we've identified as a program that had the potential to sunset that will likely be extended, we think, now. So one area of opportunity that we've identified.
Treasurer Pichak, one of your signature proposals in your role has been to eliminate up to $100 million of medical debt for Vermonters, particularly those with low incomes or high existing debt. How big of an issue is medical debt in this state? Why is it something you wanted to focus on?
Yeah, well, you know, medical debt's an issue across the country, certainly. Number one reason for personal bankruptcy in the United States is medical debt. So clearly an issue across the country. But I was talking about the state of the healthcare system in Vermont as being fragile. And when you think about Vermont specifically, you know, our healthcare costs are very high and some of the highest in the country. And our median wages are not some of the highest in the country. So we have expensive health care relative to our median income here in Vermont. And when you have certain gaps in your health care system, almost inevitably people are going to end up in medical debt. So we view it really as a gap in the health care system. And because health care is more expensive in Vermont than other places, Vermont has a disproportionate share of medical debt compared to some other states. So it was really why it rose to the top for us. We view it as a direct investment into people that are holding medical debt. But we also view this as an opportunity to do something smart in terms of an investment. You can eliminate $100 million of medical debt for the one-time investment of $1 million. This is because the medical debt is older and it's held by moderate and low-income Vermonters. It's lost a lot of its economic value, but the face value is still that big number for the individual consumer. So they may be less likely to seek credit or try to get a mortgage or a car loan because they're worried about this debt that is unowed. They may have direct financial impact because of this debt that they owe. But it also shows that it changes their behavior. They're less likely to seek medical care with the provider because of the medical debt. They feel shame about it, or they're worried their medical provider won't see them because they haven't paid their bill. And when you don't get the care you need when you need it, it becomes a bigger problem, both from a health standpoint and from an economic standpoint, as well as a financial standpoint. Mm-hmm. So the idea here is to be able to make this investment directly into people, one-time investment of $1 million, to have that significant impact of eliminating up to $100 million in medical debt.
Where'd that $1 million come from?
So our suggestion is that it come from an amount of money that was previously appropriated to our office. It was intended to be used to buy down some of the state's outstanding bonds. We've been able to refinance state bonds and save millions of dollars. We haven't executed on this money that had been appropriated to us, given the interest rate environment. So we suggest taking $1 million of this $20 million that had been appropriated to us for this purpose. We think it will just have a bigger impact in terms of directly to Vermonters versus buying down $1 million of our outstanding debt.
Hmm. So last month, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, mm-hmm. a federal agency, finalized this nationwide rule that would remove medical bills from credit reports. You were just mentioning how mm-hmm. these bills could negatively impact people's credit standing. The CFPB is one of the agencies that's being targeted for major changes right now by the Trump administration. Is there any chance you think that that policy could be rescinded? And if so, are there any state-level equivalents?
Yeah, it's a great question. And it was something we were worried about heading into this legislative session. So our medical relief proposal actually includes a second part, which would prohibit the reporting of medical debt to credit rating agencies. It mimics the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau's rule in many ways. We thought that rule was vulnerable because it was done toward the end of an administration. You know, regardless of the rule, I feel like when it's done toward the end of an administration, it gets more scrutiny when the new administration comes in. So we're worried about it as a rule. There had been some legal challenges to it as well, which concerned us. And then also just the focus on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, like not just that the rule might be repealed, but the entire entity may no longer exist, you know. So that's why we wanted to include it at the state level as well. So it is in our proposal. Mm. And there are a few other states that have similarly prohibited this kind of reporting. The reason you do it is because it's not like when you want to go get a mortgage or you want to go get a loan for your car. It's not like other kinds of consumer debt. When you have a healthcare emergency, you're focused on getting the care that you need. You don't really have a choice to get the mortgage or not. You do, you know, you have a choice to get the mortgage or not. You don't have a choice to get the healthcare or not when you're having a medical crisis. And we, in fact, heard from an individual that told us about, you know, a situation where they had a medical episode, their insurance company didn't cover them in the way that they thought that they should be covered. They were too focused on getting better. They couldn't focus on not on this bill that was wrongly charged to them. And it ended up in collections. So there's just a great example of somebody that was not sort of voluntarily taking out credit and then failed to pay it back. Mm-hmm. A medical event is something that happens to you, and it's not indicative of your credit worthiness. So that's the reason that a lot of states and our state are pursuing rules that would and legislation that would prevent that from being reported to credit rating agencies.
And this is you and your office's proposal, but it is currently working its way through the legislative process
right.
in Montpelier. Well, lastly, we have just a couple seconds left here, but your office is running a pretty fun for the Treasurer's Office, no offense, campaign to return unclaimed money to Vermonters this month. It's called the Claim Your Money campaign. Can you tell us what exactly it is you're trying to return?
Yeah, for sure. So in our office, we have over $130 million of unclaimed property for Vermonters, and that number keeps growing every year, even despite our best efforts to return that money and get the word out. So this month, we've made a goal of returning $1 million to Vermonters, and I think we're well over halfway of that goal. We just have 1 week left here in February. So we encourage Vermonters to check if they have unclaimed property. It can be a nonprofit that has unclaimed property, a small business, a municipality, a school district. Any kind of organization can have unclaimed property. It could be for you, a family member, a neighbor. So the website is missingmoney.com. That will search not only our database, but all of the state treasurer databases across the country in case you've moved or have family members in other parts of the United States. So we encourage everyone to get on and search and see if they have a little bit of money with our office, and we'd be happy to return it to them.
I already looked. I had less than $10, which was a bit of a letdown. But I hope all of our listeners out there have unknown wads of cash that they're about to be able to access. Vermont Treasurer Mike Pichek, thank you so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Coming up, Republican State Senator Scott Beck, Vermont's Senate Minority Leader, will join us in just a few moments. What do you want him to know about your priorities for your elected officials this legislative session? Is there an issue you care deeply about? Call in at 800-639-2211. We'll take those calls in just a minute. Stay with us. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. If you're just joining us, we are sharing the latest on the local impact of the Trump administration's firing of federal workers and funding freezes. We're also trying to get our finger on the pulse of your feelings about all of these changes happening at the federal level. More voters voted for Trump in 2020. More Vermont voters voted for Trump in 2024 than in 2016 or 2020. Do you approve of Trump and DOJ's efforts, or do they concern you? Call in at 800-639-2211. You can also email us your thoughts at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Our next guest this hour is Vermont State Senator Scott Beck. He's a Republican from St. Johnsbury, representing the Caledonia Essex District, and the Senate Minority Leader. He was a member of the Vermont House of Representatives for a decade before being elected to the Senate this past November. Senator Beck, welcome back to the show.
Hey, good to be here. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so the pace of change in Washington right now can be hard to keep up with. Which policies or presidential actions do you think are going to have the greatest impact on Vermonters, positive or negative impact?
Well, I think certainly the discussion over tariffs has the possibility of impacting everybody. And so I, you know, keep my eyes on that and hope that much of that, if all of it, doesn't come to fruition. And then also the conversations around Medicaid, that's our, you know, our vulnerable population, those concern me as well. But as you said in your lead-in, this is all moving so quickly and in so many different directions at once, it's really difficult to understand exactly what is real, what is not, what is short-term, long-term. The unknowns are very large right now.
So say these tariffs do go into effect on March 4th. It's still an unknown, of course, but I imagine that many people in the state, from, you know, business owners to elected officials such as yourself, are preparing for that possibility right now. What are conversations like at the State House in Montpelier about what would happen to Vermont if these tariffs against Canada go into effect? Tariffs on Canada, excuse me.
Well, I think the conversations around that have not, I think the conversations are a little louder around what would this mean for various Vermont state and designated agencies and the services that they provide to Vermonters.
Okay.
But I think that, you know, just generally the concern about tariffs is that, I mean, tariffs don't get paid by governments and they don't get paid by businesses. They get paid by consumers. And, you know, we're just coming off a really high inflationary period, and a lot of people are still, you know, trying to catch up from all that inflation. Eggs are terribly expensive. Lumber looks like it's going to go up. And so, you know, we're not really in a position for people to absorb another inflationary jump. And so that, I think that concerns everybody. But as far as the conversation in Montpelier, I think we think more of the agencies that we have fingers in.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to the phones here. We have Glenn on the line in Fairhaven. Glenn, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Sure. We moved out of Ludlow last March after waiting 3.5 years on a FEMA hazard mitigation grant. Ludlow was significantly flooded in July of 2023, and a number of other businesses had applied for assistance. And curious whether anybody knows if maybe the state of Vermont can make up for the difference from what might be necessary in order to keep that program alive, to get businesses that are repetitively flooded out of trouble.
Mm. Thank you for your question, Glenn. And yes, Senator Beck, maybe more broadly, are there conversations happening amongst you and other legislators in Montpelier about ways to kind of cover some of the costs that the federal government used to step in and pay for that might go away, including flood mitigation efforts?
Well, I think I'm not sure if the question is talking about what the federal government doesn't fund normally or what they might not fund because of all the noise down in Washington, D.C. right now. I think that we are cognizant of, you know, what these different decisions might be, how they might impact Vermonters. And if there's those kinds of losses, I think there's some appetite in trying to figure out how much we could mitigate. But as far as just stuff that the federal government doesn't cover or has never covered, I don't think we're probably in a position to do that.
Mm. Thank you. Ross in Sudbury is also on the line. Ross, go ahead. Hi, Ross. Can you hear us? All right, we'll work on getting Ross back in just a moment. Senator Scott Beck, DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, which is headed by the billionaire Trump advisor Elon Musk, is the driving force behind many of the funding freezes and layoffs that we've been reading about in the news over the last couple weeks. The main goal here is to cut the fat in the federal government, reduce spending, and hopefully pave the way for tax cuts in the future. Do you think that Vermont's state government would benefit from a state-level Department of Government Efficiency?
A state-level department of, I mean, a state equivalent of what's going on down in Washington, D.C.?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't think so. I think Vermont, we have a functional budget process. And I think what DOGE is at the federal level, it's an indicator that we do not have a federal budget process. Haven't for many number of years. And so, I don't think that's something that Vermont would benefit from. I think we have a budget process.
Mm. Well, speaking of that budget process, let's talk about one of the priorities for Vermont, again, at the state level right now this year during the legislative session, and that's fixing the education funding system. It's a mandate from voters. Governor Phil Scott has introduced a big plan to transform the education system. And one sticking point that's come up is around school choice. His plan would increase the number of students who are eligible to use vouchers to go to schools outside of their district. That's received some pushback from Democrats in Montpelier. Do you support the governor's education plan and this aspect in particular?
I think just for some clarity there, you said an expansion of the voucher system. Vermont does not have a voucher system right now. We use public tuition for certain areas. But if you're speaking about, do I support?
Let's just be very clear there. So there are students who can choose to go to a different school outside of their district. First, if there isn't a public school in their district,
right.
And
that's
in some
correct.
Other situations.
A voucher system is only used where the school operates a public school, and then the child can, instead of going to that public school, they can opt to take money and go somewhere else. In areas of Vermont where public tuition is used, there are no, in those districts, they don't operate public schools in those grades. And that's a huge distinction.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the proposal that went out from the AOE, that we would have this system of homeschools and school choice schools and whatnot, I think I'm having a hard time getting my head around that, because I think you are getting into a voucher system, and a voucher system is not anything that I have ever supported. I support the public tuition system that Vermont has right now, where districts get to make their own decision whether they want to participate or not. And I'm spending my time sure that public tuition system, as we know it right now, and as Vermont has known it for well over 100 years, continues.
Excuse me. Well, on the topic of education, Town Meeting Day is just around the corner. It's next week. And last year's Town Meeting Day proved to be a major referendum on education funding in the state, with nearly a third of all school budgets failing that day. Do you expect something similar is going to happen this year, or has enough changed already that we're going to avoid what happened last year?
I don't think it will be as bad as it was last year. I don't know if I'm confident enough to put a number on, you know, the number of school budgets that might need a second or even third vote. But I think, you know, two things are different this year. One is that, 5.8% is definitely less than 18%. And I think the other piece is, I think the CLA reform has kind of taken the volatility out of that system, which I think has helped settle things down a little bit. But with that being said, I mean, a 5.8% increase is still and that's average, of course. That is a pretty big ask of voters. And so I would not be surprised to see some budgets fail, maybe more than normal, but I guess it would not rise to the level that we saw last year.
And CLA, that's the common level of appraisal, which is used to calculate town tax rates. I think we have our caller Ross in Sudbury back on the line. Ross, can you hear us?
Yes.
Great. What's your question or comment for Senator Beck?
My question was, how does he feel about Mike Pichak's proposal to buy down medical debt from people who are burdened by it? And he was suggesting that with a $1 million payment, that we could buy down $100 million of medical debt and really make a difference in the lives of a lot of people.
Thank you, Ross. And yes, this proposal from the Treasurer's office is going through the legislative process right now. Senator Beck, what are your opinions on it?
I'm okay with the proposal. In fact, I signed on to a bill to that effect. I think, you know, I think it's got the potential to get some, you know, bang for the buck. And so I'm supportive.
Well, thank you, Ross, for your question. Let's bring in one more caller, Adora in Charlotte. Go ahead. What's your question for Senator Beck?
Hi. I've been thinking about, back to the federal level conversation, I've been thinking about whether Vermont might be particularly targeted for federal funding cuts because of our reputation as a blue state and the fact that we were the first state called for Kamala Harris. Is there a way for the federal government to kind of target us because of that?
Thank you, Adora, for the question. I'll also note that our governor, Phil Scott, has also not voted for President Trump and made that clear in previous elections. Senator Beck, could that affect any of these choices being made at the federal level? What do you think?
I mean, I think in theory, people have theorized that for quite some time. I'd also add to the list that Vermont was the only state where Vermont Republicans did not choose Donald Trump in their primary last year as well. But, you know, I don't think any of those theories have ever materialized in the past. Maybe it's because we're so small and the federal government is so big that nobody seems to have ever gone out of their way to damage Vermont. But, you know, I think it's something that we're always on the lookout for. Certainly, I'm looking out for Vermonters. Governor Scott is looking out for Vermonters. All of my colleagues in the legislature are, and our antennas are up. And we do have a federal delegation down in Washington, D.C. that I think works pretty effectively for us as well. We're vigilant, but I haven't seen any indication that any of that has come to fruition.
Republican Senate Minority Leader Scott Beck of the Vermont State Senate, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
We have to take one more quick break, but when we come back, we are going to speak with a regional USDA leader who was recently fired. If you have lost your government job or federal funding for your organization recently and feel comfortable sharing your story, call in at 800-639-2211. We'll take those calls in just a moment. Stay with us. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Today on the show, we are discussing the local economic impact of the Trump administration's recent layoffs of federal workers and changes to funding as well. Joining us now is Richard Amore. In October, he was hired by the U.S. Department of Agriculture as its Community and Economic Development Representative for Rural Development in Vermont and New Hampshire. A week and a half ago, he was fired. Richard Amore, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Michaela. It's a pleasure to be here.
What were you tasked with doing while at the USDA?
Yeah, absolutely. So the work of, you know, USDA Rural Development's all about supporting and investing in our rural communities. The Vermont-New Hampshire jurisdiction, we cover two states up here in New England, and we were all about investing and supporting aspiring homeowners or municipal leaders and Main Street business owners. And, you know, it's really about investing in the places we all live. We live here in the community, in our neighbors, and we really are, you know, investing in job creation, investing in municipal infrastructure and affordable housing. These are the bedrocks of our communities.
So what I didn't hear was farming and agriculture, which are things that many people associate with the USDA. Did your work have any direct relationship with ag?
Yeah, absolutely. So USDA Rural Development was, you know, as part of the USDA, is really focused on the rural communities in our agricultural landscape. So we do provide programs, loans to support agricultural producers, but the majority of our work is ensuring that our farmers have vibrant communities to live in. And so the work of rural development, unlike the Farm Service Agency or even NRCS, was really focusing on investing in our communities and community leading community economic development in rural America.
Mm. So you were classified while at the USDA as a probationary employee. What did that actually mean? What constitutes a probationary employee?
So, yeah, you know, many of us, you know, these terminations in the tens of thousands, they came from a standard form letter with no evidence of poor performance or any reason for termination. Our supervisors didn't even know this was happening. And we, as probationary employees, many seasoned and mid, you know, career professionals like myself, have limited appeal rights and made us easy targets for mass terminations. We were vulnerable, not because of any reason, just because we happened to start in federal government within the past year or two, or maybe even just changed jobs or even stepped up to, into a leadership position, which puts you on a probationary one-year term, which makes you vulnerable to termination because you don't have the rights to appeal, nor do you have bargaining rights. So you are, you know, at risk of kind of at-will employment. And thousands of rural development employees across the country were terminated a week and a half ago.
Mm. How many others were terminated in Vermont or Vermont and New Hampshire where you worked?
So Vermont and New Hampshire, we lost five employees, four others, including myself. And then there's several others also taking the fork in the road deferred resignation offer. So we were a staff of about 30. Now we're down to a staff of 20 in Vermont and New Hampshire.
Mm. Yes, let's talk about that fork in the road email, which included a buyout offer. Is that something you received prior to being fired, that offer?
Yes, every federal employee across the country received that offer.
Hmm. And what did you think when you got that email? Did you consider taking it?
There was so much uncertainty and so much confusion and so much demoralizing emails coming through OPM and federal government at that time. I did not consider that. I was hired to do this work. I was committed to serving rural communities across Vermont and New Hampshire, and I was going to stay until I couldn't do that work anymore. And that day came on February 13th.
Hmm. If your experience echoes what our guest, Richard Amore, has gone through in recent weeks, we'd love to hear your story as well, if you're comfortable sharing it. You can call in at 800-639-2211. You can also email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Richard, the memorandum that went out with these firings read, I'm quoting here, "The agency finds, based on your performance, that you have not demonstrated that your further employment at the agency would be in the public interest." That's from the Director of Human Resources of USDA. I can imagine those were really difficult words to hear. Can you tell us what it felt like when you first got that memo?
Yeah, it was devastating. And it really hurts, you know, because I've served, you know, rural communities in Vermont for the past 14 years. I worked a dozen years at the Agency of Commerce, and I just saw this opportunity with rural development and USDA to continue that work, continuing serving rural Vermonters on the ground in their communities. And it seems like a good opportunity to help bring more investment in rural communities across our brave little state. And to get that letter really was just, you know, heartbreaking to see, but also really made me more convicted than ever to with a stronger conviction than I've ever had to serve rural Vermonters. And I'm not going to, you know, let this impact my passion and desire to support and help the communities and our neighbors across Vermont.
Mm. So are you already thinking about what you'll do next?
Yeah, I mean, it's all fresh and it's all new, and I'm still processing this big impact after, you know, making this change. But I'm still committed and looking to find a new role where I can continue to serve and support rural communities across our brave little state.
What concerns do you have for the region following these USDA terminations? Could you give us examples of how exactly the work will change and the people on the ground who might notice an impact?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, last year, USDA Rural Development in Vermont invested nearly $124 million in nearly 300 projects, from single and multifamily housing to rural and agricultural producers to community facilities and water and wastewater infrastructure to even broadband investments in the Northeast Kingdom. With less staff, there's going to be less investment in rural places across our state. You know, the state office was already at 61% of its capacity prior to these cuts, which our congressionals elevated back in November. And with less staff, this threatens our ability to serve rural communities and advance economic development efforts and build resiliency, which is needed more than ever as we face these past 2 years of disasters. Hmm.
And how do you think, or do you think, the state or local organizations might be able to fill in the gaps of your work and the other employees who were let go? Is that possible?
Yeah, I mean, definitely will be less federal investment, but we are fortunate to live here in Vermont, and I'm grateful for that. And we have great legislature, state agencies, philanthropy, nonprofits, and regional partners. They just will have to step up and fill this void that this administration is creating in rural Vermont.
And Richard, you know, we've heard from a number of current and former federal employees who are concerned about speaking out for fear of retribution or concern about, you know, not being able to be hired by the federal government in the future. Why do you feel compelled to speak out about your experience?
Yeah, Michaela, thank you for asking. You know, I think it's necessary for Vermonters, Granite Staters, to understand the impacts, hear the story that your neighbors are getting impacted with these terminations, ones who were committed to serving our rural places. And I'm committed to sharing the story, but also committed to the work on the ground is needed more than ever because of what's happening in Washington, D.C. And, you know, I'm no longer a rural development or federal employee, and I'm speaking this on my own volition and have really no desire to go back and work for rural development under this administration with what's happening at the federal level. And so I am speaking because I'm really concerned and worried about lack of investment in our rural communities who need it more than ever.
Hmm. Do you plan to be involved in any lawsuits that challenge these terminations?
I haven't considered any of that. I'm looking forward. I tend not to look back and just try to plow forward ahead to continue the great work on the ground.
Hmm. I want to read an email from a listener named Kevin in Shelburne, who writes, "I own a business in Shelburne and did not vote for President Trump, and I'm very concerned about the job losses caused by the unelected Doge head Elon Musk. They certainly don't seem to care about how those good-paying jobs being taken away affect local economies. The trickle-down effect of those losses will impact all of us. I really hope the courts will be respected, and if not, we will have a greater crisis on our hands." Richard Amore, I'm curious about your thoughts there. Do you feel like, I mean, for yourself, you said you're already thinking about other ways to do work in this area of rural development. For you and the other people who have lost their jobs, are there other employment opportunities available in this region?
Yeah, I mean, Vermont is a small rural state, and so, it's the market conditions, you know, sometimes takes a little bit of time to find work in this field. But I'm committed to serve, and I'm not going to let this little hiccup stop me from serving this great state.
What are you hearing from others in either in the agency at USDA or other agencies that have been let go by DOGE? Are you having conversations with other people in your shoes, or sort of experiencing this kind of privately?
Yeah, I've actually talked to a few folks, my past colleagues at Rural Development, and across the country. You know, there was 542 Rural Development employees terminated last week across USDA, and we're you know, Rural Development's only less than 5,000 people across the country, and these were in field offices in rural places, not in Washington, D.C. You know, that's 542 families across rural America, dozens here in Vermont. These are our neighbors, our friends, folks like me, who are dedicated public servants making rural America a better place. And now they are gone, unlawfully terminated, and unable to serve rural communities. And that just breaks my heart. And I know our rural places will need us more than ever, and I'm committed to finding a new way to serve.
Hmm. Richard, you were relatively new to this position. You'd started in October. I'm wondering if there is something that you were able to start work on, maybe a particular program or a partnership that, looking back, you feel particularly proud of today.
Yeah, I mean, I'm only 4 months in, and it was building off of 12 years at the Agency of Commerce and Community Development, and a lot of the work kind of carried over because it was really all about building relationships and partnerships, and anybody who does rural economic and community development, it is all about partnerships and relationships and building trust on the ground so you can direct federal or state investment to the places that need it most. So a lot of my role in the first few months was really supporting local municipal leaders who would call and reach out, local businesses would call and look out for loans or grants, and connecting them to the right resources so they could invest in their business, they could invest in municipal infrastructure to support housing, as we all know, needed more than ever in Vermont, or could support marketing their products to expand their agricultural production. So, you know, I'm really sad not to be able to continue supporting that work on the ground, but I feel very honored and fortunate that I was able to do that for a few months and then 12 years prior with Agency of Commerce, and know that I will continue to find ways to do that.
Yeah. Richard, it seems like you have a healthy perspective on this situation. I'm wondering if you might be able to leave us with one piece of advice for somebody who is working in government right now or feels like their job or their funding is at risk. What advice would you share with a person like that?
Yeah, I would just say, you know, right now, you know, personally, I would say, Michaela, thanks for elevating this story and sharing its impact. It's important to be told for all of us in federal service or who've been terminated for federal service. And if you know a federal employee, please reach out to them, give them a hug, and reassure them that we have their back, because what they do and what they commit to bravely serve rural Vermonters during these unsettling times is above and beyond. And so they demand our respect and applause right now. And that's what I would say. If you know anybody in your life or your circles, please reach out to them. Give them a hug. We need them more than ever.
Richard Amore, formerly of the U.S. Department of Agriculture. He worked at their Rural Development in Vermont and New Hampshire office. Richard, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for telling the story.
And we wish you the best of luck. Well, that is all the time that we have for today. But as I've said over the last couple of weeks, we are working hard here at Vermont Edition to contextualize and fully understand the effects of all the changes going on at the federal level on Vermont and our surrounding region. If there's a particular aspect of the story that you want to hear more about, questions you have, people you want to hear from, you can always email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to be discussing the class of antidepressants known as SSRIs. Those are medications like Zoloft and Paxil and Lexapro, excuse me. The new U.S. Health Secretary, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., says they are being overprescribed to children. So tomorrow we'll be joined by the head of child psychiatry at the University of Vermont to explain what exactly these medications do to the brain. If your child takes an SSRI and you've noticed differences in their behavior or you have questions about how they're used, email us ahead of tomorrow's show at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. Today's show is directed by Mary Angish. Our managing producer is John Ahrens, and our producers are Andrea Lorien and Daniela Fierro. Anna Berg is our intern, and our call screener today was Kelly Delorier. Our theme music was composed by Myra Flynn. I'm Michaela LaFrac. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch up again soon.